This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 4th of May 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of May, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, before the What's On feature in the announcements, I just want to remind you that it is the Association's AGM next week. Winchester Talking Newspaper AGM is next Wednesday, the 9th of May, at 2 p.m. in Littleton Village Hall. And you'll all be very welcome to attend. Now, what's on this week? In Winchester Cathedral, there's a choral classics lunchtime recital. That's on Monday, the 7th of May at 12:30. And that's free with a retiring collection. And if you want more information, you can telephone the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. In the Great Hall, Winchester, on Saturday the 12th of May, there's a concert by the Romsey Male Voice Choir and the Romsey Youth Choir. That's on Saturday the 12th of May at 7:30 p.m. and it's in aid of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. The tickets cost £12, but they can be obtained in person from the Hampshire County Council box office. The Theatre Royal has Sense and Sensibility on from Thursday the 10th of May to Saturday the 12th of May. Performances at 8 p.m. with a matinee at 2 p.m. on Saturday. So that's at the Theatre Royal, and the box office is 01962 840440. And finally, at the Mayflower, Southampton, running until the 26th of May, is Oliver. Various performance times, so if you want more information, it's 02380 711 811. Now, lighting up time ends today, Friday the 4th of May at 5:33 a.m. and begins at 8:33 p.m. And on Wednesday next, the 9th of May, it ends at 5:25 a.m. and begins at 8:41 p.m. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. And Lynn's details are on a laminated card inside your wallet. Please leave the card in there for future use. Thank you. Now, the main headlines this week: clampdown on alcohol licences, underused library in Stanmore to close, and little Lexi can look forward to a better life. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is clampdown on alcohol licences. Trading standards officials have taken unprecedented action to clamp down on the sale of alcohol to children in Winchester by seeking to ban a shop from selling any alcohol. County Council Trading Standards took action against off-licences Stanmore Stores and RNK News after both failed two test purchases by underage volunteers. Both shops had their licences to sell alcohol reviewed by Winchester City Council on Tuesday, May the 1st, the first time such an action has been taken. Operations were carried out at the end of last year, with both shops failing twice between September and January. Trading Standards Officer Stephen Lawford said the short time between failures was the reason for the reviews. He asked the council to revoke RNK News' alcohol licence after the shop on Stockbridge Road did not follow an agreed action plan after the first failure. Mr. Lawford said, "I see this as a personal failure when we have a hearing because we work closely with shops. The licence holders are the ones responsible for this matter and it's their responsibility to ensure the people working at the store are fully trained and comply with licence regulations. The only option we can take is to revoke the licence." He was supported by PC Alan Reid of Winchester Police, who said, "It is the licence holder's responsibility, not the police's or trading standards, to ensure the premises is run properly, something they have catastrophically failed to do. Licensing consultant Dick Hudson, representing R&K owners Jay and Manoj Patel, apologised for the errors and said problems began in November after the shop's former manager went on holiday to India and did not return. He added, Manoj and Jay Patel have run the business for almost 4 years and until last November were not aware of any problems relating to underage sales of alcohol. But a council licensing subcommittee, chaired by Malcolm Wright, only banned the shop from selling alcohol for 1 week and imposed a series of conditions on its licence to ensure staff are properly trained and record any alcohol sale refusals. After the meeting, Manoj Patel said, We are happy with the result. It is in our best interests and everyone's best interests. Our staff made a mistake, but we have appointed a new manager who has sorted everything out and all is running smoothly now. The committee also imposed the conditions on Stanmore stores in Wavell Way, as asked for by police, and Mr. Lawford, who said the shop had been complying with regulations despite failing the tests. Police will also carry out an inspection of CCTV cameras at the shop, which cannot be removed under the new conditions. Halimur Jan, boss at Stanmore stores, said, I made a mistake and I'm sorry. I just want to move on now and concentrate on going forward with the business, working closely with the police and trading standards. Despite the reviews, Mr. Lawford said underage sales were decreasing in Winchester, with test failures reducing from 38% in 2003 to around 9.5% now.
More troubles in Stanmore. Underused library in Stanmore to close. Stanmore Library in Winchester is to close, the County Council has announced. The branch in Wavell Way is the first of 53 county-run libraries to be axed under cuts to the service aimed at saving £450,000. Closing the library will save about £36,000 a year. But locals may be able to borrow books from nearby Carroll Centre, with the County Council in discussion with the City Council about moving it there. The centre already offers free public IT access, a children's centre, and an after-school club. The City Council has recently commissioned architects to look at ways of making better use of the centre. An open day is planned on Tuesday, May the 17th, to show some of the ideas being considered. North Baddesley Library is also threatened with closure unless volunteers come forward to run it, but no decision has yet been made. The County Council says Stanmore Library is one of its smallest neighbourhood libraries and significantly underused, with just 106 borrowers per month at a cost of £15 per visit. Over the last 5 years, book issues have dropped by 49%. Councillor Keith Chapman, Executive Member for Culture and Recreation, said, Only 3% of people who live in Stanmore actually borrow from the library, and it is within 2 miles of Winchester Discovery Centre. In light of budget cuts to the library service as a result of lower levels of government funding, we feel that it is not viable for the library to continue to be run by the library service. However, critics have pointed out Stanmore Library is only open 9 hours per week, with no Saturday or evening openings, making it difficult for people to visit. Ward City Councillors Jamie Scott and Lucille Thompson, who have been involved in roundtable discussions about its future, both back a move to the Carroll Centre. Tory Councillor Scott, who chaired the discussion, said, I think it is really positive. He said it could mean longer opening hours. Liberal Democrat Councillor Thompson added, it would keep a library service in Stanmore and it would get used by more people because it would be in an environment where people go. Certainly there will be a lot more children there, and parents when they come to pick them up. The County Council said the details still had to be worked out, but the library was likely to be run on a day-to-day basis by the Carroll Centre. However, the move still has to be approved by the Board of Trustees at the Carroll Centre. The controversial closure comes on top of £750,000 saved by cutting library staff and reducing the mobile library service. And there's a little photograph of this very modest-sized library in Stanmore.
Little Lexi can look forward to a better life. A Winchester charity is helping a five-year-old girl with cerebral palsy communicate after donating £2,500 to her family. The money from A Better Life was used to buy a special eye recognition computer for Lexi Cooper Barnes, who cannot talk because of her condition. Her mother, Charlene, 34, of Sand Martin Close, East Lee, said, "Lexi communicates well, but she doesn't talk, so it's hard for her at school. Her speech and language therapist recommended this eye gaze equipment, and she's been doing very well. She's only five, and we want her to be able to say things like, Mummy, I'm bored of shopping, like other children would. Her father, John, and I are very grateful for the help from A Better Life." The charity raised £5,000 through a ball and an annual Wacky Races go-karting event at Kingsworthy last summer, and donated the other half of the proceeds to the Hampshire Horse Riding Therapy Centre in Hensting Lane, Colden Common. Kerry Coutts, founder of the centre, said the funds were used to buy a new horse named A Better Life Tally Ho, to be ridden by children with special needs, such as Lexi, who also attends the centre. Kerry said, "It's brilliant we have received these funds. It brings sunshine to us during these days of rain. This has bought Tally Ho, and she's fantastic, and is great for both disabled riders and able-bodied ones." She added that the money would also go towards centre maintenance and horse feed. Lee McQueen, who runs the charity with co-founder Lisa Bowers-Stroud, said she was delighted to help both causes. "What is important to the stables is one thing, and what's important to Lexi is another. But they are both valuable." And accompanying this item are photographs of the yard at the Horse Riding Therapy Centre with all the helpers and charity people who have donated, and little Lexi sitting astride Tally Ho. And also a bigger photograph with a very happy, chuckling little Lexi on her lovely horse, Tally Ho, who is a chestnut with a lovely white blaze down his face.
Thank you. And that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, and first person. So firstly, the death announcements for this week, the 4th of May. Baker. Jesse Baker died peacefully on the 29th of April, aged 89. Cardi. Edna Mary Cardi died peacefully in hospital, aged 94. Edgerton. Lawrence Edgerton died peacefully in hospital, aged 78. Lee. Frank Lee died peacefully on the 30th of April, aged 96. Penfold. Bob Penfold passed away on the 24th of April after a heroic fight with cancer, aged 48. White. Ron White died peacefully at home, aged 94. And Wilson. Audrey Wilson died on the 30th of April, aged 91. And now, perhaps we could have a Christian comment, please, Bobby.
And this week it's offered by Rosemary Baker, who heads it, "There's nothing like a letter." The cost of postage has gone up astronomically this week, and articles in the press have commented that this will spell the death of the letter. I'm not sure that this hasn't happened already with the use of email and texts, as well as frequent use of the phone. Looking back over the last few weeks, I think I've only received one letter, a short note thanking me for a lift and inviting me to supper. It could just as easily have been done over the phone, but somehow the letter made it more personal and meaningful. I remember how important it was when I was away at university to get letters from home. They came every week without fail. My father's, when I could decipher the writing, they were fairly short, very informative and full of humour. My mother's were longer and more mundane in content, but still very much appreciated, particularly as I knew how hard she found them to write. She'd had no secondary school education, and I was as the eldest of four. There were still three children at home, so she was kept fairly busy. The first letter I received from my very young sister, although the pencil has faded, is still one of my treasured possessions. With the exception of some of Paul, the letters of the early Christians don't tend to be focused on much in our churches, and yet they were very instrumental in helping both spread and build the faith in the early years. There must have been huge excitement whenever a letter arrived, both for the news it contained, as well as any practical advice that it offered to the early recruits, as well as lifting their spirits in difficult times. Perhaps it's even more important in our current financial climate to make the time and the extra effort necessary to write to people. Family members who are old and infirm and who may not be able to write back may be glad to receive a letter, while someone else may find it useful to read it to them, thereby having something to talk to them about. A lot of pleasure can also be got out of re-reading letters. Sometimes all the information is not taken in and retained during a conversation. There is also the leaving of letters that we want to be read or reread after we have gone. Messages of love, as well as advice, things we wished we had said or explained, family history, all these can be in a letter, which is more reliable than an email and easier to keep. Yes, those who are better off can also give gifts of stamps. Yes, you know, letters are important.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this one from Phil Yates, on historian and archivist, Theatre Royal, headed Theatre Builders Timeless Trademark. Sir, with reference to recent correspondence relating to builders leaving their trademark in the form of faces in flint walls around the city, it may not be known, but the Theatre Royal possesses a different sort of face, that of the face of a wristwatch. High up on the flint wall of the Back Garden Café, formerly the Atrium, is a watch embedded in the flintwork after one of the builders decided to leave his timepiece in the wall as a memento. When we conduct tours of the theatre, we always point this out. To locate it, you look high up to the first floor window and follow along until to a small square of concrete, the flint wall being on either side. There, in the concrete, is the watch. So when you next visit the Back Garden Café, where excellent coffee and light meals are served, or have a drink during the interval of a show, see if you can spot this unusual trademark left by one of the builders in 1999, 2 years before the refurbished venue reopened. And that was from Phil Yates, on historian and archivist, Theatre Royal, Jewry Street, Winchester.
This is from F.M. Goodall of Twynham's Hill, Shirrell Heath. Sir, I write this as a contractor strips the verge in front of my home of all the spring flowers which have just managed to push their heads up above the grass. While I realise sight lines for side roads must be maintained, I don't understand why every single blade and bloom that dares to grow over 8 inches in height on our verges gets mown to the ground. It's been a late spring, and much of the cow parsley and the other flowers are barely out. Thanks to our obsession with tidying up the countryside, they never will, depriving insects of food and birds of those insects. This would not be quite so maddening if it were not for the fact that Hampshire County Council spends thousands urging us all to be more green, even as the government relieves us of millions in so-called green taxes. If the county is serious about saving money and being kinder to the environment, may I ask that where it is not necessary for safety reasons, it stops sending out contractors to hack our hedgerows and verges to pieces? Or are they really not interested in saving money, time and the environment? F.M. Goodall, Twynham's Hill, Shirrell Heath.
And this letter comes from Councillor Colin Davidovitz, who is the Executive Member of Communications and Efficiency. One Council Chief Who Earns His Pay is the title. Sir, the Taxpayers' Alliance does a good job for taxpayers in holding the government and local authorities to account for the way they manage their resources. However, the recent headlines their report received about officers' pay did not tell the whole story so far as Hampshire County Council is concerned. The Chief Executive of the County Council is its highest paid employee, but is far from being the highest paid in the land, although Hampshire is one of the largest county councils in the country. What the Taxpayers' Alliance does not say is that Hampshire's taxpayers benefit hugely from the work their chief executive does for the government, which has paid the council twice as much as his salary in the fees it pays for the work he has been commissioned by them to do in assisting the government in its national economy drive, which has helped to allow council tax across the land to be frozen for 3 years running. Neither does it allow the actions the council has taken in reducing its budget by £100 million over the last 2 years, partly by reducing its highest paid earners by a quarter, as it restructured and merged its services departments, thus releasing, and not replacing, two well-paid service directors. The huge savings this has made, together with the staff reductions resulting from its recruitment freeze and staff release programme, will be embedded in future budgets to the benefit of Hampshire Council taxpayers for years to come by continuing to levy one of the lowest rates of council tax in the country, whilst meeting increased demands, improving services, and still being rated an exemplar and excellent authority, giving high value for money by the National Audit Commission. That is from Councillor Colin Davidovitz, who is the Executive Member of Communications and Efficiency of the Hampshire County Council.
And this from Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, and is accompanied by a rather depressing photograph of a man standing under an umbrella, rain pouring, grey, looking at a building being built with scaffolding, piles of stuff around. Anyway, do planners realise how housing will impact on Winchester? Sir, if Barton Farm is given planning permission based solely, or so it seems, on housing numbers, it would be disastrous for Winchester because of the increased population and vehicle traffic. On the other side of the road from where I live, a new development of 87 houses is currently in progress.
it.
I do wonder if our city councillors and planners have any idea of the effect this will have on the city. Surely a site of this size, when complete, should be studied with regard to its impact for a number of years. Those houses that will not be designated as affordable are already being advertised as luxury homes. Can this be right? Primary schools are full to capacity, roads are congested, and there is limited parking. The driver of the bus serving Abbots Barton has to be extremely skillful to get his 8-foot-wide vehicle safely past parked cars. How much harder is it going to be when there are a number of vehicles coming and going from the new development? Our councillors are proud of the success of the street markets attracting more people into the city. There would be no room for these if the streets were thronged with thousands of people living in Barton Farm. Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, Week, Winchester.
And Terence F. Wall of Westminster Gate, Winchester, writes more about traffic tribulations off of Romsey Road. Sir, Mr. Edwards, from letters on April the 26th, is correct to say pedestrians using the refuge at the top of Stanmore Lane suffer delays, often several minutes. Most will also have to cross Oliver's Battery Road north, itself near a blind bend. The opportunity to sight a zebra crossing outside the new care home should be taken, as it would remove the dangerous jaywalking practice. As an occasional cyclist, I prefer to be much nearer Romsey Road than the advanced stop line to get well away ahead of all traffic. Returning to the previous layout could give room for up to 8 cars in 2 lanes, rather than just 2 spaces in 1 lane, as at present, and would greatly improve the flow out of Oliver's Battery Road north, where at peak school times it can take 10 to 15 minutes to go 300 yards. It is also true that the phasing of lights is a problem. Either the Stanmore Lane lights are on green for a short period, followed by Killam Lane, delaying Romsey Road even longer, or there is a short change to Romsey Road, then Killam Lane, if a vehicle has triggered the sensor. Frequent changes are a good way to cause traffic jams, as every change involves a lengthy period when no vehicles are moving. They also increase accident risk, as drivers are motivated to gamble, knowing they will have to wait a long time. A proper box junction and a return to just 2 settings for the lights, as Mr. Edwards suggests, would improve flows immensely, particularly if a turn right only light were installed in each direction to come on for a brief period after the straight ahead flow lights change to red. I even agree with Mr. Ward that traffic exiting Oliver's Battery Road north should not receive special treatment, but I doubt that he has ever had to wait in line in Stanmore Lane for anything remotely near the time those suffering the school run problems do on a daily basis. Personally, I blame myself if I forget and leave home at those busy times. At present, it is only the most universal courtesy of the drivers coming up Stanmore Lane that allows even one car to exit. The change to the junction should let far more than only one more car occupy the space up to Romsey Road, if only it could be brought forward in the authorities' plans. Terence F. Wall, Westminster Gate, Winchester.
Flats were never meant for children, writes Mrs. P. Dollery. Sir, with reference to the misery of the lifts in the high-rise flats at Winnall, when these flats were first erected, they were classed as luxury housing, and it was deemed unsafe for children to be housed here because of the windows and balconies. Indeed, anyone living here who was expecting a baby was swiftly moved out, and no type of animal was allowed either. It would appear that over the years, and because of housing shortages, those rules no longer apply to the flats, and council use them to house unmarried mothers and people on social security. Now, the council has this problem with the lifts, which they have brought on themselves, merely because there is insufficient housing. I should add that I have lived here for 42 years and have never experienced any damp problems. It depends on how you look after the property. That's from Mrs. P. Dollery of Blackston House, Winnall, Winchester.
Thank you. Now we're going to step back in time a couple of hundred years for the historical items. Nikki.
And this is 1812. A rumour is currently in the city and generally believed that two persons were committed to the Tower on a charge of high treason. It originated in the report of a postchaise and four, escorted by two horsemen and a party of the River Fencibles, crossing London Bridge in the evening and proceeding towards the Tower, with two French officers, who broke their parole and were apprehended in Kent. They were conveyed to the Thames Police Office and committed to Bridewell.
1912, so 100 years ago, couple of items. An interesting series of cookery demonstrations will be given by Miss Smith, MCA, in St Thomas's Hall, Winchester, from May 14 to 17. Apart from being instructive from a housekeeping point of view, excuse me, they will prove the economy, cleanliness and healthiness of cooking by gas. When used with one of the many efficient types of gas-heated water circulators, it renders the use of a coal range quite unnecessary. This is worthy of great consideration, especially during the hot weather. And the other item, the progressive policy of the Railway Institute Committee in catering for the recreation of their members was further shown on Saturday, when the splendid new bowling green and tennis courts, recently made on the ground next to the Institute, were opened. Throughout the exceptionally dry season of last year, the greens were carefully attended to by Mr. W.H. Brown, caretaker, and the result was seen on Saturday afternoon.
And 50 years ago now, 1962, Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, visits the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Monday next for the Nurses' Prize Giving, which marks the 225th anniversary of the oldest provincial hospital in the country, founded near the cathedral by Dr. Alured Clark in the days of George II. Later, it moved to Parchment Street, and then, in the 19th century, to the Rumsey Road site, chosen by Florence Nightingale, a site it still occupies. It is now in the list of hospitals to be completely rebuilt in the next 10 to 15 years. And the second item, 12,000 women in Hampshire and the Channel Islands will, quote, extend the hand of friendship this month as a start to Christian Family Year in the Winchester Diocese. The campaign, a national one, is sponsored by Mothers Union branches to achieve advice, companionship, and a wholesome Christian influence in building and preserving happy family life.
And finally, 25 years ago, 1987, by 7-4, Bishop's Waltham Parish Council this week rejected a proposal to declare the parish a nuclear-free zone. In a farewell speech, Councillor Ted Winfield sought to raise awareness of the issues involving nuclear weapons. Of their deterrent role, he asked, "Do we want to live in a society overshadowed by fear and doubt? The world stands on the brink of the final abyss. Let us resolve to take all possible steps to ensure that we do not, through our own folly, fall over the edge. And now we're going to move on to a Chronicle editorial comment, Nikki.
Does the printed page have a future? This week spelt the final chapter for Stanmore Library, as council chiefs revealed that it would close. It raises the question of whether public buildings packed with great works have a future in the digital age. Well, yes, they do, at least if the county's decision to stock electronic books is any guide. The new service, also announced this week, will allow people to download titles to a range of clever gizmos, including laptops and mobile phones. Another sign of things to come is Winchester Discovery Centre, which has been a successful cultural hub with art exhibitions and live music, and it also boasts a cafe. But purists of the printed page have attacked the dumbed-down venue for not having enough books. Then again, if all you need is a computer to issue e-books, then the library of tomorrow could offer millions of titles while operating from something the size of a phone box. Indeed, that might be a good use for the many seldom used and neglected K6 kiosks around the district. And that returns us to the question of whether public buildings piled high with the printed page have a future. If council chiefs decide the answer is no, it would be better to equip them for the digital age rather than abandon them to a slow death.
And now first person's going to be read by Graham.
And in this week, Ron Allison is also a supporter of the printed word. What he says, long live newspapers. I wasn't able to begin to write this piece until last Saturday afternoon. I had to be certain that we'd done it. That the Saints, that Southampton Football Club, in case you're not that local, had won promotion to the Premier League. But all was well. The Saints were going up. A second consecutive promotion had been achieved, and it was congratulations to Nigel Adkins and all involved at St Mary's, with a job most certainly well done. Straight up, too, no messing about with playoffs. Talk about marching in. A couple of dozen miles down the coast at Portsmouth, it was a very different story. Pompey were down to the third tier of English football, with serious problems off the field as well. Taking no pleasure at all in this, I hope that the club and their fans will look to the west and realise that it is possible to come back from their precarious position. It will not be easy, not without pain, and not without a well-heeled investor. But it can be done. It has been. All this diverted me from other thoughts, in particular Mr. Rupert Murdoch and his evidence last week to the Leveson inquiry. I do not think I know anyone who is indifferent to Mr. Murdoch. He's a great divider. Some admire his achievements here, in Australia, in America, and elsewhere. Others see him as a danger to democracy, seeking to use his influence and power to his own ends. It was fascinating to see and hear him as he gave his evidence, following that of his son and some of his former senior executives. He and I were in complete agreement on one matter, though. Mr. Murdoch loves newspapers. He is heavily involved in many other aspects of the media, broadcasting and publishing, for example, but it is the print media for which he cares the most. So do I, although at a somewhat lower level. I love a good paper. When I see the Nationals spread out on the counter at my newsagents, I want to read them all. At one stage of my working life, I had to at least skim through all the papers each day. It was bliss. Where I hope Mr. Murdoch was wrong was in his prediction that the end of newspapers was in sight. Perhaps within 20 years, he wondered. No newspapers? No, no, I want to go on holding and folding, keeping cuttings, reading and rereading. For all the faults of some, papers are wonderful. We must not let them disappear from our lives or the lives of generations to come. I want to read about the saints and Pompey, holding the newspaper in my hands as I do so. Long live print.
And that's the end of those, so we now continue with items of general news. Bobby.
And this one is from Alsford. Pensioners ordered to rehouse their scooters. Two Alsford pensioners, average age 100, have been told to shift their mobility scooters amid fears they could combust. Two residents aged 101 and 98 at the sheltered accommodation Ellingham Close were told they can no longer store their mobility scooters under the stairs in the communal hallways because the scooter batteries could catch fire. He said, I think this is unnecessary. Neighbours do not have any problems with me storing my scooter in the stairwell, and I've been doing it for 5 years. I really can't see how it's a fire hazard, because the buggy is made of metal and it's parked out of the way, so it's not an obstruction. Jeffson Housing Association has told residents to move scooters into their rooms or pay for a concrete hard standing area outside to store the vehicles. But Mr. Hammond said his scooter was too large to move into his room, and to do so he would have to replace it with a smaller model costing around £1,000. Fellow scooter user Les Holder, who's 99 this Sunday, added, we have had letters to say we have to have a concrete area outside for them. But I've been told that scooters are not built to be left outside, and if mine was outside during winter, the batteries could freeze. Mr. Holder, a retired farmer, added, I don't want to cause a row, but I really think this is all so stupid. It's health and safety gone absolutely mad. But John Evans, the housing manager for Jeffson, said, over the last few years, there has been an increase in fires caused by mobility scooters. Scooters can also cause an obstacle for people needing to leave the flats in the event of a fire. We understand that decisions taken on health and safety grounds can be unpopular, but the advice from the fire authorities is that scooters should not be stored in hallways. Other residents at Ellingham Close have backed the scooter users against the housing association. Julie James, aged 64, said, these elderly people don't want to fight and will do anything for a quiet life, that the stress that has been put on these three residents is awful. It's like health and safety coming to your door and telling you what you have to do with your house, and 9 out of 10 people would tell them to go away.
Wildlife Trust's Hilltop Centenary. And this is accompanied by a beautiful photograph, sort of misty, of the sheep grazing on the downland grasses of St. Catherine's Hill, Winchester. A Winchester beauty spot will host a 100th birthday party with a difference later this month. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust is not celebrating a personal landmark, but the centenary of the Wildlife Trust at St. Catherine's Hill. Activities include guided walks, a nature trail, a grassland bug hunt, wool spinning demonstrations, and a timeline of the hill's long history. There will also be children's activities and refreshments, including mutton and beef burgers, served throughout the day. A special trust birthday cake will also be cut by mascot, Bramble the Badger. The activity day takes place on Saturday, May the 19th, from 10:30 till 3. For more details, call Michael Allen on 07831 692 07831 692 963. That's 07831 692 963.
Jobs fears over plans to share office services. Council chiefs have taken a major step forward to joint working with the fire and police services in a bid to save money. The Cabinet of Hampshire County Council on Monday, that was April the 30th, approved the business case for sharing back office services. But unions are concerned the move will mean job losses, cuts in services and more privatisation. The County Council, Hampshire County Constabulary and Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, HFRS, are the three largest public sector organisations in the county, with a combined budget of £1 billion and 36,347 full-time equivalent staff, excluding schools. Five areas have been earmarked for integration: purchasing, ICT, finance and payroll, human resources and occupational health and well-being. The idea is a new body will be set up to run these corporate services. At present, the joint spending in these areas is £67.8 million, with 1,196 staff on the payroll, the vast majority employed by the County Council. One-off set-up costs are estimated at up to £3.7 million, including redundancy payoffs and pensions contributions. For example, there will be only one head of human resources instead of three. Savings are expected to be achieved by reducing overheads such as shared IT, fewer managers and increased purchasing power. In addition, civic chiefs are considering opportunities for joint working in training, transport, research, estates, facilities management, corporate communication, press office and legal services. Conservative Council boss Ken Thornburgh said the aim was to save £6 million in 2 to 3 years, when further cuts in public spending are expected. The County Council is already halfway through a £100 million savings drive and has shed about 1,200 jobs. Councillor Thornburgh said the three organisations will retain their identities and strategic responsibility for their own operations. He added police and fire services had been run as part of the County Council 15 to 20 years ago, when they shared legal services and human resources. HRFS has also approved the business case, but Hampshire Police Authority asked for more information and will reconsider it. Peter Terry, regional organiser for Unison in Hampshire, said unions were not opposed in principle to joint working. Mr. Terry said, but very often these things mean job losses, cuts in pay and conditions, poorer services and outsourcing. It is not yet known how many jobs will be axed.
The Met lead a hunt for the bomb hoaxer. Police are still hunting the hoaxer who paralysed much of central Winchester with a bomb scare. Officers believe that the call, which led to swathes of the city being cordoned off, was made in London. As a result, the Metropolitan Police are now leading the investigation. The bomb scare named Winchester Crown Court as the intended target on Monday, April the 16th. Swindon Crown Court was also identified, but nothing was found there either. Winchester's emergency plan was activated. Every available police officer was drafted in, ambulances were lined up at the railway station, and the bomb squad was called. There was also a 200-metre exclusion zone around the court, and the whole area was evacuated. It included several office buildings, pubs, cafes and shops, which led to complaints from several traders. Hundreds of workers at Hampshire County Council's Castle HQ were also evacuated for several hours. All cases at the courts were suspended, and prisoners on remand had to be driven back to jail. Traffic jams were reported across the city centre until police reopened Southgate Street to get things moving. The whole cordon was lifted around 4 hours after the emergency plan was activated.
Help needed to keep the Itchen clean. Winchester City Council is looking for volunteers to help with a project to keep the River Itchen clean. For the past 5 months, the Winchester Going Green project has been collecting waste from the riverbanks and the beds of the Itchen. Phase two of the project begins this month, and the council is appealing for help clearing household waste and litter from the waterways. Said project manager Luciano Vasconcellos, "For an area that is so renowned for its waterways, Winchester is still has a way to go to ensure that they stay that way. I am often astonished at the amount of litter and also household waste that we find in the river and want to help people understand the importance of keeping these areas clean and healthy." Rob Heathcock, Assistant Director of Environment at the Council, added, "This is a key priority for the Council, and we have been happy to help the Winchester Going Green team with their aims of not only clearing the rubbish, but also educating people on the impact it has." During phase one of the project, more than a ton of waste was collected, with the largest amount found in the river in front of Abbey House and Abbey Gardens. The project benefits from having access to new technology in river clearing, such as remote vehicles, which can be used up to 5 feet underwater to remove objects from riverbeds. Anyone interested in volunteering? There is an email address which is long and complicated, but there's a telephone number which I'll give you. 0800 206 2212. 0800 206 2212. You may know someone who wants to do this. And there's a photograph with this of the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Barry Lipscomb, with Luciano Vasconcellos, and other volunteers from Winchester Going Green with some of the rubbish. And if I was to tell you that I can see bed frames, metal beer barrels, thousands of ghastly plastic bottles, large paint tins, chairs, the endless traffic cone, tyres, bits of old fridge. I mean, it's quite incredible. So well done, them. That's what I say.
It's a happy picture owing to the change of church wardens at Old Alresford. At the annual meeting of St Mary's Parish Church, Old Alresford, Lady Wakeham and Mrs Sarah Richardson, who are both in the picture, stood down after 5 years' service as church wardens, and the other person in the picture, standing in the middle of them, is the Reverend Phil Collins, who thanked them all for all the time, energy and enthusiasm they had given in their time of office. And they're looking very happy to have done a good job, and each of the two ladies has a very handsome bunch of flowers. Their successors are Miss Gail Straker and Mrs. Antonia Booth.
A poet wins a bid to extend his 400-year-old cottage. Winchester City Council have approved a plan for an extension on a 400-year-old thatched cottage in Titchbourne. Charlie Otley, a poet, journalist and TV presenter, was granted permission for a two-storey extension at his home in Church Lane. Council planners were against the proposal, claiming it would harm the character and historical importance of a listed building. But Mr. Otley argued the extension was necessary to upgrade his 17th-century home, which he said had numerous problems dating back to the 1950s. Mr. Ockley, who is aged 40, said, "The bathroom is a shed tacked on to the side of the house and is a health hazard with black mould. Plus, I have one room I use as an office, which I have to go up and down to a ladder to reach it. It would be inaccessible to all but the most athletic as a bedroom. If I wanted to start a family, I couldn't do it here." A council planning committee voted in favour of Mr. Otley after a visit to the property 2 days before. Councillor Robert Johnson said, "Buildings have evolved throughout this district, and even the cathedral is a mishmash of extensions. I can't see how anybody can be condemned to live in these conditions." And Councillor Ray Pearce added, "What's unique about this is that normally we would be setting a precedent by changing the appearance of the cottage, but going round the village, every old cottage seems to have been renovated." Later, Mr. Otley, who recently made a documentary with Prince Charles in the Carpathian Mountains, said, "I've no axe to grind with the planners, who do a good job. I feel it was a case of prioritising, and whether you prioritise people living in a building or whether you prioritise the bricks and the mortar." His application was backed by many neighbours in the Tichborne Parish Council, and he held a party at the house to thank all the supporters for their house, for their help.
Dog walkers alert, not treated seriously. A Hampshire farmer died after gassing himself in a horse box, an inquest heard. Nicholas Gamblin, 52, was found dead from carbon monoxide poisoning on his land near Swanmore, just 12 hours after police had been alerted to suspicious noises coming from the vehicle. Mr. Gamblin of Mayhill Farm, Mayhill Lane, Swanmore, was found by police in a field near Hackett's Lane, Droxford, in the early hours of November the 1st last year, after his wife Christine reported him missing. Dog walker Richard Hillary found the horse box the day before and alerted police, but was told not to worry by staff at the Netley Force control room. Mr. Hillary of North End Lane, Droxford, said, "I'm upset because I found the horse box at 11 a.m. and I've just heard that his wife has spoken to him at 10:30 a.m. so I'm wondering if he was still alive when I called the police. I was told it had been checked out and it was all fine. I said, 'Are you seriously telling me that it's all right and to leave the scene?' But Inspector Russell Cavillock from the Netley control room said Mr. Hillary's call had not provided evidence of threat to life. He said, 'I'm really sorry for what's happened, but we can only go with what detail we've been given.' Mrs. Gamblin said they were divorcing as their marriage had broken down, but her husband showed no signs of harming himself. But the inquest heard Mr. Gamblin left notes behind for his wife, three children and the police. His sister, Susan Hartley, added that he was a loving father who would be sorely missed. Last Wednesday, April 25th, the coroner for Central Hampshire, Graham Short, recorded a verdict of suicide."
You'll be able to judge whether this next piece has come true, because by the time you hear it, you'll know what the election results are. Because it says, "Winchester Liberal Democrats are hoping that the lingering resentment over the controversial Barton Farm issue will boost their election chances." Today, that's yesterday. "They are campaigning on their opposition to the proposals for 2,000 homes on a farmland on the northern side of the city. Most Tory, Independent and Labour councillors have backed developments on the farmland, with only the Lib Dems opposing the proposal. The final decision is set to be made by the Communities Secretary, Eric Pickles. Council leader George Beckett believes it will only be a live issue in wards such as Littleton and Hairstock and St Barnabas, close to the new development. Most people are realistic about it and accept that if not Barton Farm, then other sites come into play. I don't think it's a big issue anymore," he says. "At the big vote, there were only 35 people there, the same people who are never going to support the Conservatives," he added.
Councillor Beckett argues that the debate over the need for more housing has been won, with Barton Farm the least worst option. Of the 2,000 homes proposed by Carla Homes, some 800 will be, quotes, affordable, unquote, and let to people on the City Council housing register. But Councillor Kelsey Learney, leader of the Lib Dems group, disagreed that Barton Farm was a dead issue. It's very much alive. People feel let down by the Conservatives. Although the Lib Dems backed plans for housing there in the past, notably earmarking it as a reserved site in 2003, compared to the Tories, they look relatively blameless, she maintains. When it comes down to it, it's their choice, and they choose to build on Barton Farm, said Councillor Learney. Lib Dem candidate Martin Todd, standing in the St Paul ward that covers the full flood area, said the Tories could not now blame anyone else. We have a Conservative Secretary of State, a Conservative MP, a Conservative-controlled City Council, and a Conservative County Council. They've run out of excuses. So we shall see who was right.
Something else to do with building here. An application sparks a solar panel debate. Councillors in Winchester have expressed their disquiet over the increase in solar panels being installed on residential homes. At a recent planning meeting, Councillor Ian Tait said, "I happen to think solar panels are ugly. They are not attractive features in their standard form. Solar panels are spreading across the city, and if they were not solar panels but just a roof form, we would be refusing them because of their impact on the aesthetics. It's unfortunate that we let through ugly additions to properties where in some instances there are acceptable alternatives like solar tiles, which can be almost indistinguishable from regular roof tiles." Councillor Eileen Berry, who also sits on the Littleton and Harestock Parish Council, added, "I believe we'll have a sea of these things on porches in future, and we'll be asking in 10 years' time, whoever started this?" The comments were made when the committee were discussing an application by Liberal Democrat leader Councillor Kelsey Learney for the installation of solar panels on the porch at her home in Harestock. The committee approved her application. Councillor Learney said, "We've had these new panels properly designed by a specialist manufacturer, and the porch will be oak-framed, and I think it's going to be an improvement." And she added, "I think it's inevitable that we're going to see more solar panels on houses. At the moment, they're still a bit new and people aren't used to them yet. But with time, I'm sure it'll be like satellite dishes." Chris Holloway, Director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, said the benefits of solar panels outweighed any visual drawbacks. She said, "Whether or not panels are ugly is a matter of personal taste. Whereas global warming is a reality that will affect the world for our children and grandchildren, and I think it's more important to be giving them a place to live."
And this is a piece about Christina Schmid, headed "A Promise Kept." Featured is Christina Schmidt devoted herself to fulfilling her husband's last wishes after the army veteran who was stationed in Winchester was killed while defusing a bomb in Afghanistan. But now she tells Hannah Stevenson that it's time to move on. A pile of boxes remain unopened in the new house that Christina Schmidt and her 8-year-old son Laird have just moved into. Army headquarters held too many memories for the young widow, whose husband, Staff Sergeant Olaf Oz Schmidt, was killed trying to defuse a roadside bomb in Afghanistan's Helmand province the day before he was due to fly home after a gruelling five-month tour of duty in 2009. Schmid, 30, of the Royal Logistics Corps, was posthumously awarded the George Cross after he defused 64 bombs in 5 months. The medal and his iPod, which he carried with him everywhere, are now on loan to the Imperial War Museum. Christina, 36, hit the headlines when she applauded him as his coffin was carried through Wootton Bassett, fulfilling the promise that she had made to him that if he died in Afghanistan, she would honour him, stand proud, and let people know what was going on out there. Quotes, "I realised that my clapping had got people talking about Afghanistan and the role of the army there and the men who were dying, and raising awareness of the Afghanistan conflict was a good thing," she recalls. Now she has written Always By My Side, which charts their love story, his career, the terrible grief his death caused, and her fight to honour his memory. Nearly 3 years on, she believes she has made a difference. She took part in a hard-hitting panorama programme, which brought to light the difficulties faced by the bomb disposal experts and the ever-increasing threat of IEDs, improvised explosion devices. She met David Cameron, who later pledged a further £67 million towards armed forces training and equipment, and most recently pressurised him to ensure that the military covenant he pledged to provide better long-term care for troops and their families becomes law. Christina has also campaigned for the charity Tickets for Troops and travelled up and down the country doing motivational speaking. She seems a force to be reckoned with, yet there is a vulnerable side that many have not seen, as she endeavours to keep calm and carry on, nearly 3 years after her husband's death. She has not put up the family pictures of her, Oz and Laird, Oz's stepson, in the new house near Winchester, because they still make her cry. And she is forcing herself to open one box of his possessions every month. She tries to keep busy on anniversaries and hasn't resorted to antidepressants or booze. She had counselling briefly, but says it didn't work for her. Christina now wants to move on. "I've got to live in the moment. I can't live in the past or the future. I treasure what I have now. I need to redefine myself. The reality is Oz is not here and he's not coming back." She's been dating another soldier, Mark Clark, for a few months after meeting him in a coffee shop and feels the need to start living her own life. Christina, a former pharmaceutical account manager, was pregnant with Oz when Oz went on his final tour of duty, but lost the baby several months later. She'd also suffered a previous miscarriage and admits that she grieves for the family she never had. "For now, she thinks it's time for her to step back. I want to take stock and focus on Laird. I want to step back from the forces, which reminds me of Oz. It would be nice to do campaign or charity stuff, but on a local level. The pictures of her late husband may eventually come out of the box in her new house," she smiles. "A couple are already framed, and I know I'll put them somewhere, along with some of his trinkets, but not just now." And there's some lovely pictures of her, with her long blonde hair, very pretty, and her with Oz, sort of down and by the beach in their wetsuits, happy, smiling. Very good-looking man, Oz. Also in his army gear in Afghanistan, and a picture of him lying on the lawn with Laird lying sort of on his back looking up at the sky. And her book, Always By My Side, is published by Century and is available now.
County chiefs have taken legal action to evict a group of New Age travellers from an illegal campsite in Mitchell Dever Station. The 8-strong group, including a couple and 6 single men, have been told they have to leave the former chipping depot at the junction of Andover Road and the A30 by June 6th. But locals are divided on whether the travellers, who've lived on the county council-owned site for 12 months, should be evicted or allowed to stay. Mitchell Dever Parish Council called for court action on the grounds the travellers broke barriers to gain entry and are illegally occupying the site. They say some villagers have complained, but some residents of Mitchell Dever Station have called for the travellers to be allowed to stay and their alternative lifestyles respected. Clarissa Palmer, Leslie Robert and Sue Bell say the arrival of the group has not led to any rise in antisocial behaviour, and they've tidied up the site, even planting flowers. The travellers earn a living by making wooden toys and garden furniture out of recycled materials, which they sell to locals. They've even helped out at the village fete. In a statement, the County Council said, "The matter went before Winchester County Court in February, and as a result, the group has until June the 6th to vacate the site. Should they fail to leave, the County Council will go back to court and take action to remove them from the site." The Council said, although this meant the site would not be vacated immediately, it would avoid the public expense of a two-day trial. In 2002, the Council closed a traveller's site at Dummer after violent disturbances.
It's a jewellery sale at Hilliers. Some of the South's top jewellery designers will be coming to Hampshire for an event entitled Spring Bling. The exhibition of work is taking place at the Sir Harold Hillier Gardens near Rumsey on Friday, May the 11th. The 22 jewellers taking part are all members of the Wessex branch of the Association for Contemporary Jewellery. All work is for sale, with prices to suit all budgets, and visitors should also commission a special piece. Admission is included in the entry price to the gardens, and there is free parking. Some Meet the Maker events are also being planned later in May. And if you want further details, there is a telephone number, 01794 369 318.
When the town goes to the country. Sparsholt College is opening its gates for the annual Countryside Day. Thousands are expected to flock to the campus near Winchester on Saturday, May the 19th. Visitors can have a go at catching fish in the college lake and try their hand at archery or air rifle shooting. The Equine Centre will be running displays and the Horticultural Department will hold a plant sale. There will also be a Build a Garden contest and the BBC Radio 4 Gardener's Question Time potting shed will be open. Also planned are displays of milking, sheep shearing and ploughing. The pig unit will be open to visitors too. The same applies to the game and wildlife unit along with the Animal Management Centre. It has more than 600 animals from more than 100 species, with creatures ranging from the fluffy to the spindly to the scaly. And for those who prefer machines, there will be displays of new and antique agricultural and forestry machinery. In the college library, author Kathy Woodman will be signing her books. Meanwhile, the sports department will run several events with an Olympics theme, and there will also be a climbing wall. A craft fair, falconry displays, search and rescue dogs, and a dog agility display are planned. Other attractions include tractor and trailer rides and live music from the Ocean Brass Band. The event will run from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and tickets cost £8, with concessions and family passes available. And that's on Saturday, May the 19th.
Little advance notice about cathedral concerts. Several organ concerts are being planned at Winchester Cathedral this summer. It includes some bank holiday performances, with David Hill taking centre stage on Monday, May the 7th. He will be followed by Robert Quinney from Westminster Abbey on Monday, June the 4th. Also due to perform is Timothy Byron Wigfield of St George's Chapel, Windsor Castle, on Monday, August the 27th. The Winchester Cathedral Willis organ has more than 5,000 pipes, producing a large range of sounds. It's one of the finest organs in the country and is ideal for exploring a wide range of music. Further recitals by Simon Bell, Assistant Director of Music at the Cathedral, and Andrew Lumsden, the Director, are also planned. They will take place at 7:45 p.m. on Tuesday, May the 15th, and Tuesday, May the 22nd. The bank holiday shows all start at 4 p.m. and tickets cost £10. They are available from the Cathedral Box Office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And there's a picture of a very smiling, cheerful Andrew Lumsden seated at Winchester Cathedral's organ, holding, obviously, a sheet of music, and in front of, one, two, three, the four-keyboard Winchester organ.
Here's a preview about a Stoke Charity Literary Festival. Big names in journalism and acting are taking part in a literary festival in a tiny Hampshire village. St Mary's and St Michael's Church in Stoke Charity is hosting a three-day event, its second literary festival, starting on May the 17th. Lillian Bellamy from The Archers will celebrate the countryside in words and music, accompanied by the Antonius Players. The title of her slot is A Roll in the Hay with Lillian. Characters from the real-life Downton Abbey will be brought to life by Lady Fiona Carnarvon, who has written a book about Lady Almina, the fifth countess, who converted Highclere Castle into a hospital for convalescing soldiers during World War I. Organisers promise romance, tragedy, high society intrigue, everything that made the TV drama so compelling. James Landale, the BBC's deputy political editor, who lives in neighbouring Wanston, will prove the spirit of Hilaire Belloc is alive, as well as in humorous verse he offers a code of conduct for today's teenagers. Edward Stoughton, a BBC journalist and Daily Telegraph columnist, will read from his witty Diary of a Dog Walker. Other speakers include Elizabeth Proudman, the vice chair of the Jane Austen Society, who will talk about the author's personal life and her connection with Stoke Charity. The festival will end with Evensong to mark the 350th anniversary of the Book of Common Prayer, and it will be led by the Reverend Professor Raymond Chapman. All profits from the festival will be divided between Stoke Charity Church and the Langer Langer Scholarship Fund, a Hampshire-based charity which provides books for schools in Kenya. For a booking form, you can contact Ruth Guy at Bridge Cottage, Stoke Charity, Winchester, SO21 3PP.
Community could buy village stores and post office. More than 100 people packed South Wanston Village Hall to hear more about the idea of a community-run shop and post office. Current owners, Ron and Sue Chamberlain, want to retire and sell up, but have been unable to find a buyer for the Downs Road premises, which has been on the market for several years. To save the only shop in the village, they suggested it could be run as a community-owned store. At present, there are 11 in Hampshire, including one in nearby Sparsholt. The proposal was top of the agenda at the annual parish assembly last Monday, chaired by Peter Fox, chairman of South Wanston Parish Council. Speakers Anne Harrison, market town manager from Hampshire County Council, and Helen Melia from the Plunkett Foundation talked about existing community-run stores and what was involved in setting one up. Villagers heard this might include starting a limited company, employing a part-time or full-time manager, and organising a rota of volunteer shop assistants. One option is to sell shares to raise the cash to buy premises. South Wanston Stores and attached five-bedroom house has a price tag of £550,000, but the shop on its own is on the market for £200,000. It is also available for lease. Now the parish council has set up a working party of three councillors to decide on the next step, including Vice Chairman June Perrins, Therese Godfrey and David Selby. Mr Selby said it was fantastically important the village shop and post office remained open. He added, "The elderly population of the village is increasing and a considerable number rely on it for their day-to-day requirements. A surprising number don't drive, especially older ladies. It is to also, to some extent, the centre of village life. Ron and Sue have done a tremendous amount for the social life of the village, advertising what is going on and selling cinema tickets. I think from the interest shown, people are concerned that the shop and the post office in particular continue to function. The test is how much support there is in terms of volunteers coming forward." Mr Chamberlain said, "I was encouraged by the number who turned up to the meeting. We plan to retire in South Wanston and want to go to the village shop, so we don't want it to close." And there's a lovely photograph of various, there's the shop assistant, Suzanne Moore, owner Ron Chamberlain, Philip Keating, parish councillor David Selby, Peter Dunning and Bill Lord with Monty. Monty's a rather charming terrier wearing a very smart coat at South Wanston Village Stores and Post Office. And it's they're all smiling happily and let's hope they find someone to take it on or they manage to do it themselves.
A combination of green fingers and 21st century computer technology is helping an Alsford farmer enjoy the sweet smell of success. M&R Morton, which grows award-winning roses at its arable and sheep farm near Hinton Empner, recently branched out into the specialist sweet pea market after acquiring Green Lions Nursery in Burdham, Chichester. With the help of specialist computer software designed to provide accurate up-to-the-minute information about crops, costs and stock, the dual-location business is going from strength to strength, even though the growing season has started early because of the unusually mild weather. Rose B. Morton said, "Farming today is about one word, efficiency. To get on in the industry, you've got to stay ahead of the game, and these days that means harnessing the latest technology." As well as the main farm and contracting business, we now have two main flower growing sites and two very different flower crops. This will be difficult enough, but this year the sweet pea season has come 3 weeks early. Fortunately, we use a software system called Key Accounting, which allows us to keep completely up to date with every individual aspect of the farm's business. Without it, there is no way we could manage such a complex portfolio and remain competitive in such a difficult financial climate. The sweet pea business is currently running at full capacity, with 890,000 stems under cultivation in Chichester. The company already supplies to Waitrose and is expanding its online presence, Sweet Peas Direct. And there is a photograph from inside one of the large glasshouses where all the sweet peas are growing. And there are two smiling ladies, one perched up on a laddered platform and the other one down looking at them. It doesn't actually say who they are, but I imagine that one of them is Rose B. Morton and perhaps the other one is M. Morton. Anyway, they look very happy with what they've achieved.
If you fancy having your house immortalised on paper, now could be your chance. Retired Winchester architect Andrew Rutter is offering his skills to draw people's homes in aid of Winchester-based charity Friends of the Family. Mr. Rutter has been a trustee since it was set up 18 years ago, after hearing about it through his Quaker congregation. He's charging £30 an hour. and the last two houses he has done took 3 hours. The work is done in ink with a watercolour wash. The piece will usually be produced on paper A3 size, but this can depend on the size of the house. And from this, Mr. Rutter said it could be possible to use the drawing reduced on headed paper or Christmas cards. Mr. Rutter, who is 79, of St. John's Road, worked for Winchester City Council's planning department from 1974 for the next 24 years. I used to do drawings to help councillors understand what an application would look like if it was built, and one needs to be fairly accurate to do that. He came up with the idea after drawing some for an open garden fundraiser, which continued when he was asked to do a drawing for a restaurant in Jury Street. He has since done 2 people's homes. The charity supports vulnerable families and their children aged up to 13 in the Winchester area. "I believe in it," he says. "I've seen really difficult cases, and people's lives have been turned around, and crucially, they're more able to look after their children." And if you want more information, call Friends of the Family on 01962 864 466.
Miracle Mark's major milestone. Kathleen and Ian Hurst had been trying for a baby for almost 3 years and feared they might never get their beloved bundle of joy. But thanks to IVF treatment from Wessex Fertility, Kathleen fell pregnant after their first cycle, and little Archie not only became their special delivery on Christmas Day, but also became the 2,000th baby to be born with help from the Southampton-based clinic. The Alsford couple were devastated when they discovered that Ian, 28, had a low sperm count and low sperm mobility, making a natural conception very unlikely. And with Kathleen only 24, she was too young to get IVF on the NHS. They decided to go private and happened to come across a free seminar hosted by Wessex Fertility, where they both decided to go for the treatment. A key part of IVF involves taking drugs that stimulate the body to produce eggs. Unlike many clinics, Wessex Fertility prefers to give its patients mild stimulation, enabling them to take far less drugs and for a much shorter period of time. This more modern form of IVF, known as an antagonist cycle, has none of the adverse side effects associated with the older style of IVF treatment. Sue Ingermels, consultant at Wessex Fertility, said, "Over 90% of the clinic cycles are now antagonist cycles, and the success has been phenomenal. We've been offering antagonist cycles since 2007, and our expertise in managing these cycles is reflected in the high success rates. Our clinical pregnancy rate in the under 35 age group is 48%. Kathleen started her IVF treatment in March last year under the expert care of Dr. Sue Ingermels and Dr. Chantal Simonis, and within a couple of weeks they were delighted to be told that she was pregnant. Kathleen said, "When we took the test and the result was positive, we were stunned. You set yourself up for it not to be successful, and when it is, you think, oh my God, this is actually going to happen. This is all down to the team at Wessex Fertility. It really felt they were doing everything in their power to help me get pregnant. It's great to think that Archie was their 2000th baby, and who knows, because they've still got our embryos stored in their freezer, we might add to their statistics yet further. And I wish I could explain this picture to you, but I have never seen three happier, the happiness emanating out of this picture with the smiling faces and the most enchanting baby grinning at all of us. To you."
And they're off. That's the beginning of the caption to a picture of a group of stalwart participants in a race, led by 3 eager mutts, and three very handsome dogs they are. They're getting underway at Bar End. The Mayor of Winchester, he was there, hopes a rain-washed charity race will become an annual fixture. Councillor Barry Lipscombe said he was delighted by the success of the 9.7-kilometre run that started and finished at the Athletic Stadium at Bar End on Sunday. That was April the 29th. The event, in appalling weather, attracted around 100 runners, including one in a gorilla suit and another suitably wearing scuba diving equipment. Councillor Lipkin said, "The weather was unbelievable, but the atmosphere was superb. Talk about fortitude in adversity. Everyone was cheerful and upbeat." Winchester and District Athletics Club did a fabulous job organising it. The marshals were brilliant. Hopefully it will find a place in the Winchester calendar in the future. The route included the Itchen Navigation, St Catherine's Hill, Morstead Road, Chilcombe, and the South Downs Way back to Winchester. The event, sponsored by Den Plan, raised about £3,000, with Managing Director Steve Gates attending the event. The Children's and Family Day featured a bouncy castle. Featuring a bouncy castle, was a victim of the weather. Proceeds will go to the Mayor's three nominated charities: the Rifles Care for Casualties, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, and Winchester Cancer Research Trust. The winner was WADAC member and Michelin-starred chef Alan Murchison, closely followed by teammates Julian Mann and Paul Studley. Another WADAC member, Sandra Bowers, was first woman back. Second was Nikki Roebuck of Stubbington Green Running Club, with Lucy Griffith of Overton Harriers in third. Race coordinator Steve Goodwin made special mention of Gordon Wesley of Stubbington Green, who arrived over 20 minutes late, still decided to run. Mr. Goodwin said, "This charitable event owes a huge gratitude to all those people and children who took part and refused to succumb to the weather. I would also like to acknowledge my appreciation for my fellow club members and other helpers who unselfishly gave their time, without which this event wouldn't have happened." Now, I mentioned the first picture, and there's another one of Mayor Barry Lipscombe keeping dry as the runners came under the starter's orders. He's under a big umbrella and he's well rain-macked up and hatted, and he's holding a bullhorn loudspeaker, and I could also see that he sports one of those wonderful hooters that obviously gave the sort of klaxon sign for starting the race. And there's Tony Ryan and Mark Boyd. They were runners. Tony Ryan, described underneath as Scooby-Doo, because he's the one in the scuba diving outfit. And his mate Mark Boyd, runner number 31, he's dressed up with a gorilla mask on. But lots of happy people. And that main photograph, including an umbrella, why somebody at the back, I don't know whether they ran with that or not, but also always all making their start very enthusiastically.
Thank you. And now the final article is from Belgarum Diary, the alternative look at the news, and there's two items there. Firstly, old timer can't keep up. Some folks say things move just a little bit slower in Winchester than the bustling streets of London. About 1 hour and 45 minutes slower, it would seem. At least, that's how far behind the clock outside the city's former Guild Hall has been for the last month. The building, which dates to 1713, is now occupied by Lloyd's TSB Bank. The two-sided clock above it was installed in the 19th century. It's one of Winchester's best-known landmarks, but it's not on British summertime, as set 70 miles away on the Greenwich Meridian line. Instead, it's displaying a time, well, perhaps more appropriate for a cruise liner several hundred miles west of Ireland. Little wonder anyone checking their watch against Winchester's most famous timepiece would be left feeling all at sea. Belgarum is now keeping a close eye on the clock to see when England's ancient capital returns to London time. And the second item shows a photograph of a road sign, a yellow road sign, on a diversion route on the outskirts of Whitchurch, spotted by Hampshire Chronicle reader Andrew Scholes, and it says, "Not suitable for diverted traffic." But unfortunately, the I from suitable is somewhat missing. So it's S-U-T-A-B-L-E. How embarrassing for somebody to have to go back to school. And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please pop the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.